Welcome to part two.
Welcome.
So on this very, very special but still ordinary episode, we shall discuss the 2018... I almost had a stroke there. 2018 Korean movie, Burning. Or as it's known in South Korea, Daniel?
Burning?
Yeah.
Wow. I don't know how they pronounce it, but it's spelled B-E-O-N-I-N-G.
It's pronounced boing.
Boing.
So it's a 2018 movie directed by Chung Dong Lee and written by Chung Dong Lee and Yoongi Yo.
Yep.
And based by a short story by Haruki Murakami.
Yep.
Who I believe is Japanese.
He is.
If I'm not mistaken. Yes. Which is very interesting considering these bizarre references to other cultures outside of South Korea within the movie. But
well,
anyway, who shall do the plot synopsis?
I can do it.
All right.
So, in Burning, we follow the life of a young man called Jung-su, who wants to be a writer. And at the beginning of the movie, literally the beginning of the movie, Jung bumps into a girl who used to live in the same neighborhood as him, named Shin Haemi, who is a happy-go-lucky woman who lives in a very, very small apartment, whom he starts a little relationship with, and she then goes on a trip to Africa, and he's told to look after her cat that may or may not exist. We'll get to that. She then comes back and has another person with him, with her, this young man called Ben, played by Stephen Young, a mysterious guy whom she met on her travels and who has a weird hobby of burning greenhouses, and mysteries are afoot.
There's no foot in this mystery, but mysteries are afoot.
Indeed.
Well, we've both seen this movie before.
Yes.
Right? And so usually on the podcast, we picked movies that we haven't seen or either one of us hasn't seen before. But this time we picked one that we have because I think we disagreed on the merits of the movie.
Right.
And so this was my... Daniel, what did you think about it watching it again?
Well, I remember when I first watched it, I was very enamored by it. I don't know if I'm as enamored by this time. I certainly have some problems with the movie, but I still think it's a good movie. Like it's very sort of intense. It's really well acted. It's beautiful. Yeah, we'll probably get into some of the sort of smaller problems I have with the movie. But what did you think this time, Steven?
So the first time, I was so bored. The first time I saw it. So, I went into it with very high expectations because it did very well at Cannes that year and was considered one of the best movies of that year, 2018. And I watched it and I was so bored. I was so bored. I thought that the story was very underwhelming. Mm-hmm. Now, the second time, I picked up on more things, which made the plot of the movie a bit more interesting.
Right.
But I still think the pacing is so slow.
It is a very slow-paced movie.
Needlessly slow, I think. Where sometimes movies are slow just to ramp up tension. Yeah. But the problem is there's a portion right in the middle of the movie. So when Haeim returns from her trip...
Yeah.
And returns with Ben, played by Stephen Yeun. And then the three of them, they have like a small triangle interaction going on.
Right.
I just thought that section of the movie, up until she disappears, up until Haemi disappears. Mm. That section, I thought it was just nothing. The way they kind of do the movie, you instantly get what Ben is all about. This mysterious character, well, quote-unquote mysterious, as in you get what they're trying to do with him.
Right.
Maybe there are some twists and turns as to what Jung-su is about, But Ben is pretty much straightforward from the start. And so insisting on him over and over again just kind of felt like, I don't know, like, I get it. Move on. You know, that was my problem with it. And also, like, outside of Jung-Soo, who's also kind of a blank slate of a character, just in terms of how he performs, everybody else is kind of a non-character in the movie. Like, Haemi, what's her character? She's kind of an object of desire, almost, in the movie.
Yeah.
And Ben is also he's like a two-dimensional villain from a thriller or something. And that's kind of where I have my problem with the movie, where it's hard to care, and that's what makes it probably boring for me. You know, it's not edited at a higher speed. Like, the duration of each shot is relatively long, and the story moves slow, the running time is 2.5 hours.
Yep.
I don't know, I think they could have just tightened it up a bit so it's a bit more exciting.
Yeah.
Ben says, when Haemi disappears, he says, oh, she disappeared like smoke, as a reference to the greenhouses that he burns. You know, reference to that. Because the whole thing is that Haemi is basically a greenhouse. She's not a person. She's a greenhouse. Yeah. But, you know, it was a very on-the-nose line. And another on-the-nose line, Jung-Soo later on says to Ben, the world is an enigma to me.
Right.
What? Who the fuck says that? It's a reference to the fact that Jung-Soo has a very particular subjective interpretation of the actual world, I guess. But it just comes out as a very cheesy line.
Yeah.
There is something to this movie. So even though Jung-Soo is the protagonist of the movie,
right,
it is hinted that he is morally at the same level as Ben, who is portrayed as the antagonist.
I would say he becomes morally at the same as Ben.
Debatable.
Then we'll have a debate, I guess.
Jung-Soo is a total creep.
Indeed.
Who jerks off in the apartment of Haemi, who she told to, you know, she gave him the key to take care of her cat. So when you were doing your summary and you said that they develop a relationship, and I kind of went like, as in, I'm not entirely sure that there is an actual relationship, like a romantic relationship between the two. Because I'm not even sure, because there's a scene early on where they have sex. This is before Ben gets introduced and before she leaves to Africa, I think.
Yeah, I think it's Africa. I wrote Africa. Might be.
So before all that, they have sex, but I'm not entirely sure if that was real.
Right.
And because it's later on, you see a scene of him, another scene of him jerking off in the apartment of the girl. And it kind of shows that he's imagining having sex with her while jerking off. And I'm not entirely sure, again, how much of the relationship was imagined by him. So this is, again, hinting at his subjective view of reality, which is extremely flawed.
Yes.
Like, it goes in contrast to Ben's very materialistic view of reality. Like, Ben is a much more richer, upper-class South Korean. Apparently, he also speaks with a more modern dialect than Jung-Soo.
Yep.
But this is also comes from the casting, because Steven Yeun is American, as in he's a, what do you call him, like a South Korean American? Is that?
Yeah.
When they're all three of them are together smoking weed, Haemi takes off her top and starts dancing. And Jung-Soo starts berating her, right? and mentions that she shouldn't disrobe in front of two men, in front of the two of them. It's kind of like a hint at them being the same type of evil, almost.
So
I don't know.
My point about Jiangsu more becoming like Ben is sort of in the way the story is told, because so the first. It's not the first half. It's actually less than the first half. Is focused very much on Jiangsu and Heimi, and sort of his. I mean, you're right that the idea of the actual relationship is sort of questionable, but he at least has a fascination with her.
Yeah, it might just be one-sided, right?
Yeah. Like... and then when Ben comes into the picture, it's like his focus goes squarely on Ben to the point where Heimi just disappears from the story. Like, we're never told whether or not she's dead, whether or not she's just traveled away, or, like, she's just gone.
Yeah.
So, that's kind of my point, is that since Jiangsu is our focal point, his focus becomes more on Ben as the story progresses.
There's also a theme in the movie that I thought was quite smart. So earlier on, again, before Ben gets introduced, Jiangsu and Heimi have a discussion, and Heimi mentions this thing from, I think, an African tribe, which sort of goes into her wanting to go to Africa.
Yeah.
So this thing from an African tribe about great hunger and little hunger.
Yes.
So you have little hunger, which means the hunger of the body, you know, you're hungry for food or whatever. And great hunger means the hunger for, I guess, essentially spiritual enlightenment, like some sort of deeper meaning within your life. And I, you know, this is one of those things, like, why the fuck are characters talking about this in the movie? Oh, this is the theme of the movie, you know, like, ain't I smart, director? I think that Jiangsu is a great hunger. Like, he searches for deeper meaning in his life because he has none. Because he's poor and, well, that's about it. He's poor and he doesn't really have any friends, and he lives on a shitty farm with a cow, and his dad is in prison, his mom is estranged, so he has no real connection with anybody or no meaning to attribute to himself, and he's writing a book that we never see.
We see him write it at the end.
Oh, right, okay. But he mostly doesn't write it.
We'll get to the ending.
Yes, but he doesn't have a meaning in his life, and meets initially Heimi.
Yeah.
Now, what is Heimi? Is she a great hunger or little hunger? I don't think it's actually relevant, because one, she's not an actual person. Mm-hmm. Like, she's a plot point.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think it really matters. Yeah, I don't want to. Like, the actress actually did a pretty good job. It's just that there's not much to the character.
I would also say that rewatching this movie, I felt a bit bad for her, because her character is very much just a plot point.
Yeah.
Which...
It's kind of like a road stop to get to Ben.
Yeah. Like this is almost like a romantic thriller between actually Jiangsu and Ben, and Heimi is just there to just be there. And it's like...
There's a lot of sexual energy going on between the two of them.
Indeed. Anyway, go on.
Anyway, and I think that Ben is actually little hunger, because he's only concerned with material things, with the haves. You know, he's always shown, like, cooking. He's very associated with food, with luxury, with, you know. There's actually a very funny line, which is that Jiangsu sees Ben's apartment for the first time, and he cooks pasta in his apartment. Oh. And Jiangsu's like, man, he can cook pasta in his fucking apartment. What the fuck?
Like, I cook pasta in my apartment. Get
the dynamic between Jiangsu being a great hunger and Ben being a little hunger kind of almost turns like a predator-prey type thing, where if we are to go by just the objective clues that are left in the movie, Ben is basically innocent of whatever Jong-Soo think he is guilty of.
Yeah, we're at least never given full evidence that he did something. Like, he has Haemi's watch, and he may or may not have Haemi's cat. We do see a cat, and it does answer to the name that
Boiled.
Yeah, that Haemi's cat have, but we're never confirmed that that is her cat, because we never see her cat.
Because it might not exist.
Well, the movie does show that it does have the food gets eaten, there is poo in the litter box, we just never see it physically, which is weird.
Based on that, Jong-Soo, spoiler alert, I guess, decides to kill Ben in the end, but it kind of just feels like the whole, because his sort of surface motif is that he was in love with Haemi and Ben came into their lives, and he thinks that, you know, Ben made Haemi disappear, aka probably killed her.
Probably.
Or that's, I think, what he imagines happens. But again, we mentioned the issue is there's no actual concrete evidence against Ben.
Even the ending is sort of suspect.
Yeah, and he just kills Ben anyway.
Well,
Jong-Soo.
It's also whether or not that ending is actually real.
Because I think it is.
Because before that whole sequence, we see him sit down and actually write. This is the first time we actually see him write in the entire movie, despite him saying that he wants to be a writer. So he's like any other writer, which means he never writes anything.
Bazinga.
Bazinga at myself. And then we see a scene that just contains, we see it from what appears to be Ben's perspective, which is kind of weird because we've seen the entire movie from Jong-Soo's perspective. So I was kind of like, is this supposed to be what Jong-Soo is writing? Like, this is his ending to the story? Or is it the actual, events that happen?
I guess. I never thought about it like that, but could be.
Could be.
But I guess regardless if it's real or not, Jong-Soo, his fantasy or maybe reality, who knows, is to murder Ben.
Yeah.
But I think because the movie never incriminates Ben of anything, it kind of shows that Jong-Soo isn't really doing it for the apparent reason of I don't know, avenging Haemi, but rather because of the jealousy that he feels towards Ben's lifestyle. You know, that he is upper class and mobile and can go to other countries and eats pasta inside. And apparently the director said that the central object of jealousy between Jong-Soo and Ben is Ben's car.
Oh yeah, he drives
because he drives
Porsche.
like a Porsche,
yeah,
very fancy Porsche, and Jong-Soo drives like a shitty truck,
yeah.
And you know, like they were kind of clever with how they wrote Ben's dialogue, where they give him all these backhanded insults. It's like Jong-Soo is waiting in his shitty car outside of Ben's house. And Ben just comes to his window and, and he says something like, oh, I thought it was you because your truck is so, you know, recognizable and everything, you know, like something like that. And like, oh, because it looks like shit, you know. At the end of the day, he just might be guilty of being an asshole, you know.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think the movie is trying to tell us that he might not be guilty of anything.
See, this is where my problems with rewatching the movie sort of came in, because
all right,
like we've seen movies before where they have been like for instance The Wailing we talked about last time was had a concrete plot that you could follow, but it also had this like extra layer to it that you could go in and analyze if you wanted to.
Right.
This movie sort of has a similar structure, but I feel it leans way too hard into the analysis part, because it's like it's begging to be analyzed. Whereas if you just want to sit back and watch a thriller about, you know, Haimi disappears and there's this guy Ben who's kind of weird and a bit of an ass who may or may not have murdered her, I think you're gonna be really disappointed. And I'm not saying that makes the movie bad. It just made me sort of a bit disappointed in rewatching it, because it felt like, again, like you said, I'm director, I'm so smart, kind of a thing.
Yeah, and the intentional vagueness of it can be quite frustrating, because of the underdeveloped characters. And I feel like, to an extent, they're intentionally underdeveloped just to make it even more vague.
Yeah. They're well acted.
That's
the thing I want to point out. They're still, like, the three of them are still really well acted. They're just a bit simple in their, like, character types, you know?
Yeah. And what they do in the story, essentially. Yeah. And, but because they're so vague, you kind of are just left with empty plot threads that don't go anywhere.
Yeah.
Like, for example, everything related to Haimi, you know, might as well go up in smoke, haha. The whole thing with Jong-soo's parents isn't really developed. Like, there's a scene, I thought it was such a weird scene with his mom. Like, when his mom comes, like, hasn't seen him in 15 years because her and his father are, his father and her mom are estranged from each other.
Yeah.
And, you know, this is the first time we see her, and she just, like, is very detached from him and doesn't care and just asks for money or something. And it didn't really go anywhere, I thought. I don't know. And also, like, the whole thing with burning greenhouses that Ben has, that also kind of, like, it's kind of a weird thing that doesn't really go anywhere.
Yeah.
Like, okay, because we're trying to paint him as a, like, a, oh, is he like a, you know, like a crazy rich person that just fucks shit up for fun? But,
Is he Patrick Bateman?
Yeah, I was thinking of that. Yeah. There's like a plot point that I still don't understand. And I think it's just written in there to be a metaphor, which is what half of this movie is anyway. Which is that Ben and Jong-soo have a conversation, and that's when Ben reveals to Jong-soo that he burns greenhouses for fun, essentially.
Yeah.
Empty, abandoned greenhouses.
Which there are a lot of where Jong-soo lives.
Yes. And Jong-soo starts patrolling the neighborhood to see if any of the greenhouses were set on fire. And he says he doesn't find any. And then Ben says, like, oh, maybe you didn't find it because it was too close to you, which is supposed to be a metaphor for, or at least in Jong-soo's mind, be a metaphor for Haimi.
Yeah.
Because, like, Haimi is the closest Jong-soo feels to. So Haimi might be the metaphorical greenhouse that Ben is burning, even though that might not be true.
Yeah.
So
again, this is what I mean by the movie is like, it's like begging to be analyzed. And it's like, it's a great movie for that, honestly. And if you're if you're a pretentious film snob like the rest of us, you'll probably enjoy it. But this is not a movie I can honestly recommend to just an everyday moviegoer, because I feel like a lot of people will walk away from this movie being either really bored or really annoyed, or both.
Yeah, it feels like the meta plot is more developed than the surface level plot.
Yeah. And it's kind of funny because I for this episode, read the short story that Murakami wrote that this movie is based on.
Oh.
And it's basically just a plot synopsis of the movie in a lot of ways. Like, there are some differences. Really? like some minor differences. But it's very much like just Jung-Soo, like the character that in the Korean movie is Jung-Soo, just telling the events of what is happening. Like, he met this girl who then traveled to Africa, and then she came back with this guy, and he likes to burn, in the story he burns barns. He burns barns or greenhouses, and then she disappears, and, you know, like, it's basically just the surface level plot points, and it works in a short story because it's a short story. It's like 10 pages. Who cares? But you're asking me to sit for 2.5 hours with the same level of ambiguity as a 10-page short story, and it's like, okay.
It's well executed for what it is. It's just, yeah. It's a bit boring. I'm sorry. You know, I'm a bit struggling to get through it. What do you want me to say?
It kind of, you know, whenever a movie comes out of Cannes or any of the other film festivals and people are like, everybody's loving it, there's always something wrong there when everybody loves it. If it's like split down the middle, people love it or people hate it, then it's going to be a great time. But because then it's either total shit show or it's amazing. But
yeah,
here it's like everybody loved it. It's like, why?
Something is suspicious. It's because they all loved the fact that they got what was happening in the meta plot, and it's like, oh, this movie's so smart. I did like the sequence when they're like, it's just past golden hour, and there's the three of them, and they're smoking weed, and she takes off her top. I didn't like the scene because she took off her top. Just
Steven, I knew you were going to mention that scene. I knew when you started that was the scene you were going to mention, and I knew you were going to go with, like, that's not why you enjoyed it.
Well,
I
like the way it was shot, yeah. Okay?
It's a very beautiful scene.
It's like, done after the golden hour. Like, the golden hour is when the sun is just above the ground, but it's done when the sun is kind of already below the horizon. But it still has a lot of that haze from the sun visible.
Good use of lighting in this movie.
Yeah.
In general.
Yeah. Some scenes do look kind of boring, though.
I mean, yeah, but there are also scenes like when they're sitting in the bar and he talks about him burning greenhouses. Like, that's a pretty well-lit scene. You have her apartment is very,
By
like...
the way, just so we don't forget... What the fuck was going on with him receiving phone calls?
I don't know.
It means something.
It means something, like... Or is like... Okay, here's my conspiracy theory, so tinfoil hats on, guys.
Right.
The director read the short story, was like, I'm gonna troll the entire movie community, I'm gonna make this movie, and then... I'm not going to do anything other than what it says in the short story, and then people are just going to go crazy over it.
What's the conspiracy theory?
That he did it on purpose, that he's trolling people. He's basically doing a Lars von Trier.
Oh, god damn it. Well, because in the end, like, the whole thing, because when a movie does something like that, you just wait for a payoff to it, right? And the way this pays off is that one of the last phone call is from his mom. And that goes into a scene that means nothing to the rest of the movie.
Right.
It's kind well, of...
You could maybe argue it means something for the meta-narrative of the movie, but it doesn't mean anything for the actual narrative of the movie.
It's kind of like... Because if you think about it, Jung-Soo doesn't really do any actual investigation that yields him any... results.
He finds the watch. That's basically it, yeah.
Yeah, but that's not really proof of anything.
No, other than that Ben has the watch. And apparently a lot of other female jewelry, which, sure, for the viewer could be quite incriminating, but you don't bring that shit to the police and, you know, see how that goes.
I found the watch!
He has her watch!
And the policeman's like, yeah, so I wear my wife's watch sometimes. I think it looks kind of cool. There is a theory that I read about the movie, which is that Hey Me also has a selective view of reality, where some things she imagines, some things are real.
Right.
And
you think of the tangerine thing.
Yeah.
So Hey Me mimes, has apparently learned miming when Jung-Soo first meets her, and she shows him by like miming a tangerine in her hand, and she says the trick is to sort of think that there, how is it she goes, it's like the trick is to see a tangerine there, like
instead of seeing, she says like the trick is to feel like you're actually hungry
or something like that. Anyway, go on.
And it's kind of like, like you said, it plays into this element of her like having a very vivid imagination almost, or a powerful imagination, I guess. Jung-Soo is also like a person with a subjective, you know, mind and imagination, all that stuff. And so because somehow in her subjective mind, Hae-mi includes Jung-Soo in her memories of him, like she remembers him saving her from a fountain.
Yeah.
I think that's why he connects to her. Is because somehow these two crazy people with their subjective realities somehow incorporate each other in their own narratives.
Yeah, because he doesn't remember her at the beginning, but she says she's had plastic surgery, so.
Yeah. And he's like, oh, you thought I was ugly, but now I'm pretty. And it's like, okay.
Right.
I definitely I liked it more than the first time, which.
I think I liked it a bit less the second time.
Well, there you go.
So, Steven, we started this endeavor of this movie on opposite ends of the spectrum, you absolutely hating it, and I loving it, and now we've met in the middle.
And now we kiss.
It's gonna be awkward.
I use a lot of spit, I'm just saying. Okay. I think it's fine.
Yeah.
Maybe check it out.
Yeah.
Bring a notepad.
Bring a notepad. Have a beer before the movie and just, I don't know, wallow in it.
Smoke some weed.
Yeah, smoke some weed before. Oh my god, imagine this movie on weed. Holy hell.
Dude, he like totally killed her, but then he didn't. What the fuck? That guy was like in front of a greenhouse and like on fire, and then shit.
That cat is a metaphor for, I don't fuck. Anyway.
That cat was his mom, dude.
I love, Steven, when you do your, like, I've smoked weed voice, you sound like Jack Nicholson.
Well, another day, another $50,000.
Anyway,
next week, we're gonna do,
I'm looking forward to this. It's gonna be fun.
We're gonna do another movie from 2018, Ilang, The Wolf Brigade, or Inrang, as it's known in South Korea.
Yep.
It is an adaptation of a Japanese manga called The Wolf Brigade, I think.
Yep.
And Daniel says that this movie is like, you recommended this, by the way.
Yep.
And you say it's shit.
Right.
So, I don't know. Maybe I'll love it then.
I don't know. Maybe I'll love it.
But, okay. Why? How do you know about this? This looks like something that only 5 South Korean people know about.
We'll talk about that next week.
All right. Oh, leaving us on a cliffhanger.
Indeed.
Well, there you go, ladies and gentlemen. Daniel, the ultimate tease and expert in ass. See you again next week. Or whenever these fucking episodes will drop. On another thrilling episode of Rorain!